CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Sean Wiltshire will be giving us an update on disability employment matters.
So what's the latest with your employment work?
Well, we're still sort of trying to move ahead and see what's going to be in the federal fall economic update. Many employment services across the country, Cam, are struggling with what will the new fiscal year bring. The cuts that the government made to the Labor Market Development Agreement, which fund many activities of agencies across the province, have still not been sort of finalized. So we have agencies across the country who are wondering what the new fiscal year will bring. Also, I think that many people are sort of wondering where we will be next year with resources to help people go to work. Government has just recently limited the number of immigrants to our country. So we're going to be seeing, over a period of the next year and a half, a challenge to the labor market, because some of the people that were affected by the changes are not going to be able to have a job. So folks with disabilities have access to jobs, and we want them to be a labor market, but a lot of the jobs have not been opened up. So we're going to see now, with no immigrants coming into the country, we're going to need a new labor force, and people with disabilities, again, are ready and willing to step up. But I don't think that limiting the immigration numbers is something that we needed to do. I think that this is, like many issues we faced, it's an issue we knew about 10 years ago. We knew that the housing market wasn't going to be able to sustain if we had to bring folks in. We also knew that folks with disabilities' participation in the workforce wasn't increasing the way that government had promised through programs and initiatives. So we've kind of got two parallel issues going on here. We've got a labor market that's going to continue to be challenged, and we've got a labor pool that's continuing to look for work. I just recently came back from Toronto, where I attended the Geneva Center Conference on Autism, and a lot of the folks who were there were talking about the number of individuals in Canada who may identify as having autism and being neurodivergent. So there's also this community that also is going to need some support. So there's a lot going on, but there's a lot of challenges that we face around where will government fall on the idea that an inclusive workforce will take some work and some investment by them. And it's important that government kind of see that, you know, this investment is the long term. We're not supporting folks to be fully participating members of society. We're limiting their abilities, and we're limiting their opportunities.
So it's interesting you raised that particular point, in that sometimes a worker going in who identifies as having autism might have that label, and might be some reluctance on the part of a potential employer to see their skills rather than the first glance, first impression sort of perceptions of what autism might mean.
Yeah. It's really it's an evolving challenge, actually, Cam, because so many folks are on the autism spectrum that are neurodivergent but have a huge amount of skills. I can give you over, well, in my particular case, we ran an autism program for employment in Newfoundland and Labrador for the last 4 years. In the last 19 months, 202 individuals with autism who were unemployed went to work. So we know that they have a set of skills that the employer needs. It's really supporting folks with autism to make that match, right? Where's the employer that has the job available for the skills that I have? So very often, we were seeing individuals with professional designation. We were seeing folks with undergraduate degrees, master's degrees, unemployed on income support programs. And what they really needed was an opportunity to highlight their skills while not focusing on the aspects of their autism, but also giving the employer the opportunity to understand that the skills were there, but you may have to communicate a little differently. You may have to adapt some processes, but you're still going to get the product that you need. The individual with autism has the skills to do the job. It's just whether or not the employer can see moving some things in the environment to ensure that the job gets done.
So how do we go about getting employers to play the long game, as it were, to recognize that there might be an initial sort of cost in terms of accommodations and setup, but in the end, it'll be something beneficial on both sides?
Well, I think we take the approach that this is an economic response. So programs to support individuals with all disabilities to go to work is an economic program. It's a driver, especially given the labor market that we have and the shift in demographics. So when we approach businesses now, we talk to them about their longer-term plans. We also understand that businesses are in business to make money. So we're trying to go with an economic model of supporting the diversity with inside the workplace gives you innovation. If the job has been empty for 6 months and you haven't been able to find somebody, and we're able to get an individual that has the skills that you need, then your business can continue if you're willing to adapt and change. And business owners, in their very nature, are adaptable. Because they're dealing with the marketplace, they're dealing with, you know, staffing, they're dealing with banking, they're dealing with taxes. So they are adaptable, but this is one that they're challenged by because they don't want to do the wrong thing. They do want to hire folks, but they're unsure of what should they do, how do they do it, and what would be the best way to get the most work out of this individual by supporting them. So it's really, we kind of look at it as a little bit of a translator. The individual with autism has the skills, the employer has the job and needs the person with those skills. We just kind of got to bring them together and get them to understand how each one of them talk. So the individual with autism.
In the case of the autistic community, a lot of people with autism have said, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Yes. Yeah, and it's really individualized because some people are visual, some people have audio issues, some people have light sensitivity. It's very much as that person said, you met one person with autism, you met one. But the range of folks that now feel more included into a community because we've expanded the definition of what neurodivergence might be. People are finding some solace and comfort in the fact that they now better understand what some of their challenges may be. It's an opportunity for them also to find others in their community who can relate to some of the challenges that they've had. And this is all very important in people sort of finding a sense of belonging. It's that sense of belonging that we often look for through our work, right? It's that opportunity to participate, to contribute. So folks who are on the autism spectrum struggle a great deal with all of their talents and skills not being recognized because of the way they communicate or receive information or how they may perceive a situation. They can still do the work and have the talent, but it's how do we give them the opportunity to demonstrate that.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks.
In this segment of our show, Sarah Elster will be giving us an update on SOS. So what's the latest with SOS?
Well, I think the most biggest and exciting news, it's a little bit bittersweet. So I've had to get a new car, and the cool thing is it has an extra seat. So far, all of my supported individuals are a fan. However, I miss my little Fiat, so there's a little bit of change, but in the grand scheme of things, we need something reliable, right? So that's kind of the big news right now.
So when you take a client to a venue, what are some of the accessibility aspects you look at?
Ooh, that's a great question, Cam. I think when I'm working with my supported individuals, I take the lead from them. So if they tell me, you know what, I struggle with loud noises, I have issues when there's a lot of people around, I struggle to hear things sometimes. Those are all things that I take into account when we plan stuff. And it's always a conversation, right? It's never like, okay, we're going to this thing, surprise, you're here now. It's always like, hey, so there's a concert. Is that something you think you'd be into? No, way too many people, way too loud, can't do that. Okay, no problem. Bowling, you into that? Yeah. So it's really kind of working together with them to hear what's needed, and try to facilitate that.
So, in that sense, do you ever work in advance with any members of the community to see what accessible venues do exist?
When you say work with the community, what exactly do you mean?
Just like. When you're out in the community yourself, do you ever talk about the work you do and ask the question of, would this be disability friendly, this coffee shop or this concert hall, that sort of thing?
Again, another good question. I think a lot of times my brain is just kind of focusing on the supported individual and their needs versus the bigger picture of like having that conversation with somebody in management or something like that. I feel like where those conversations would happen is, A, if somebody asks, much like you said, somebody had the question, or if there was a problem, if there was an issue where I had to advocate for somebody for certain needs, then that's something that would go a little bit more macro. Recently, I don't know how recent, the last couple months, there's been a huge thing with the library and changing hours with the library to make it one time all the way across the board. The big problem with that is it's a huge accessibility thing because at one point, the libraries are all closed in one spot. On Wednesdays, you can only go from 12 to sometime. So that means anywhere I want to go to the library, we need to go out of this area, go to Tecumseh, right? So because from 10 until 12, there's now no libraries open, whereas before, at least there would be one somewhere, right, with the staggered hours. So that was something where I went to the board and kind of spoke on behalf of my individuals. Unfortunately, it wasn't favorable, and they did move to shift the hours. But it's things like that when accessibility problems come up that directly affect the people that I serve, that it's better to speak out than to just sit down, because that's why we're here.
So, do you find that when you do have those conversations, even out of necessity, that the community is typically glad to have greater insight into accessibility? I mean, you're providing them with maybe a knowledge base that they didn't otherwise have, considering anyone who might potentially come in and make use of their business or service.
Yeah, and I think it depends. It depends on the individual, on the service. If it's something that's a free service, sometimes I find people are less likely to change a lot of things because it takes work to be accessible. And it's needed, but it's turning the volume down at the gym, as an example. That's an active step. Right? Working on how bright the lights are there. That's an active step versus just leaving everything alone. Now, the gym was a paid option, but I do find with places that you pay to go, people are a little bit more receptive because you're a customer. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
This might change gears a little bit, but I'm dying to ask. With the holidays approaching, do you see yourself doing anything special with your clients to get in the spirit of the season?
Oh, heck yes! Yeah, so we have a big thing coming up on December 14th, thanks to Ursa Major out in Kingsville. And we're going to be walking in the Essex Parade with them. So they're a great resource, and we often kind of meet up with other disability services in Windsor and Essex County. So I think I have a very, very full car that day because almost everybody wanted to go to that. So that's definitely something to look forward to.
So do you have any message you want to send to the community about the need for equal inclusion, not just during the holidays, but across the board in terms of availability of service?
I think if you see something, say something. If you see something that's not right, sometimes it's very hard for people to advocate for themselves. So sometimes it's nice if somebody asks, like, hey, do you need some extra help? If people out there notice that there's something missing, just talk about it, bring it up, because they are probably not the only ones who have that concern. But I think a lot of times people can be silent, or they can be loud in a not productive way. So being able to just be aware of your surroundings and who's in them is an important step to take.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Blood donors are needed now as much as ever. If you would like to help meet the needs of patients across Canada, please consider booking an appointment by calling 1-800-2-DONATE. That is 1-800-236-6283, or by visiting blood.ca or through the Give Blood app. The Windsor Blood Donation Centre location is at 3909 Grand Maris Road East. Make a difference with the Canadian Blood Services.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we got an update on disability employment matters from Sean Wiltshire, and Sarah Ouster gave us an update on SOS. In this segment of our show, Aaron Chimble will be telling us a little bit about his accessibility work at St. Bonaventure University. So what can you tell me about your accessibility work with SBU?
Yeah, well, first, thank you for having me on to talk with you. I really appreciate it. I think one of the things that is important for us at St. Bonaventure and the Giandoli School of Communication specifically is that we're an environment where students, no matter their background, feel like they have a place that they belong and they are comfortable and it is accessible for them. And, you know, so from my perspective as dean, the focus as part of that is how do we make sure our students, you know, feel comfortable and can access the spaces they need, can have an environment that is welcoming for them regardless of their background. So for us, you know, we're in a building currently. If we're talking about physical accessibility, we are in a building that was built in 1981. So it's a very, relatively old building that was not built, super designed, for how we would build things today. It does have an elevator, so that's helpful. It's a two-story building with an elevator. So that is one helpful aspect in terms of for folks getting around. But we, many of the classrooms are built with tiers, and so they are not accessible at all for a student who has limited mobility. Same thing with this 430-person auditorium we have that has basically no seating designed for folks with limited mobility or that are in wheelchairs or anything like that. So it's a real, there's structural challenges because a lot of that is like poured concrete and in a building. So as we are beginning a $12.2 million expansion and renovation of the building, one of our priorities has been to ensure that we, as we expand and renovate the building, that it is much more accessible place for everybody, and that folks will be able to move around in the building easily. So we will be flattening all of these tiered classrooms that have very fixed seating and make it very difficult for somebody who has accessibility issues. For example, right now, if a student, and we've had students in that situation, they just have like a table stuck at the front of the classroom and they're isolated from their students. So by us redesigning those classrooms and flattening them, they will be able to be like any other student in the classroom. Same thing in the auditorium. By adjusting the seating, folks will not need to feel like they are pushed off to the side and are unimportant or othered. So that's an important priority. We also want to think about accessibility for students from an emotional background. And so we will have a sensory space in the building, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which will be a place for students to really go and have a calming place. And that's particularly, helps with, anxiety or other conditions that somebody might have where it's very beneficial to have a calm, reflective space. We'll have things like an all-gender restroom and a parenting space for those as well, because, again, it's all about, regardless of where somebody's coming from, that they are comfortable in our environment, which will ultimately allow them to bring their full self to the school and learn better and contribute more. And, same thing for faculty or staff to be in a place that is more comfortable for them.
So, curious, when you mentioned the whole aspect of students with disabilities being shuffled off to the side, as it were, don't you think that would have the effect of adding a mental health component to, say, a physical disability, where it need not be under these renovations? Inclusion being, sounds like, definitely a priority from your end. Why is it that you would find that including all students of all types is a priority?
One, I think, so there's two parts. One, I think, flatly it's just the right thing to do. I think, we have a responsibility to all of our students, take away the university's mission, Title IX, anything like that. We just have a basic, I think, moral imperative that we want every student to be comfortable and be able to access their learning and have the access to learning and not have any barrier put up. I think as St. Bonaventure University and our Franciscan mission, is very important that we support others, and it's foundational to the institution and the school that we're a place that is welcoming and does welcome folks regardless of their background or features about them. So we want to have that environment. It's necessary, obviously legally in some cases, but also I just think personally, but also I think institutionally, that it's the right thing to do and aligns with who we are as an institution and why students want to come here, why faculty and staff want to work here, because of that mission and that environment that's here. This is a place where you are welcome regardless of your abilities, regardless of your faith background or anything else. Like, this is a place that you can come and thrive, and we are going to invest in you as a person and do everything we can to help you feel comfortable and succeed.
So, when the renovations are complete, do you plan on sort of making everyone aware of what the key accessibility features will be?
Yes, I think we certainly want to, as we've been planning, we've been making that very clear. And then I think we want to highlight for folks, one of the things is, so we will have this, parenting or lactation room, for example, or an all-gender restroom or more accessible classrooms. Those are things that, a lot of people don't necessarily know about if you don't make clear that you have them. So I think we want people to know that those features of the building will be there so they know that they're available and that it is, maybe it's they're in an adjacent building that doesn't have some of those things or somewhere else on campus. So they know that this is a place that we have designed all these updates to include everyone. And so, absolutely, I think that is something that we will do.
So, in the planning of this, What's been the high point for you? Is there a particular feature or upgrade that stands out for you that you want to share with everyone?
I mean, there is so much. It is just to give you a little of the bit of the background. So the building, Vern, as I mentioned, was built in the early 1980s, and it's all cinder block. It's very fixed. I mentioned the poured concrete in many of the classrooms and the auditorium. It was, I will say, a building that was built on the cheap and built to be very general and inflexible and rigid, and it was, sort of a multi-use classroom building. So for us as a school of communication, I'm really excited that we're able to really build a facility that is specifically built to serve a school of communication, but to your point, also that is built to be accessible and welcoming for everybody. And so I think when people come into this building, and as we share renderings of the project and what it will look like and how it will change, I think folks will realize this is, short of tearing down and starting over, will be about as dramatic of a change as you can have for a facility. And I think folks will see that a lot of thought was put into changing it to make it a much more collaborative and accessible facility, which is both important for the things we've talked about, accessibility and inclusion, but also for creating media and bringing different elements of media and communication together in a collaborative way. Well, you can't have collaboration, you can't have, working with other folks if you have a lot of walls up, and whether those are physical or more of a, theoretical wall. So I think we want to, take down a lot of walls in a lot of ways to make this a place that will really allow our students and faculty to thrive.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure thing.
I love the fact that accessibility is a priority for SBU. But the fact is, disability isn't just a single concept. It's not us versus them. It is, in fact, the great thread that weaves through every type of person you'll ever hope to encounter. For the fact is, if you start singling out a person based on one set of circumstances, then it becomes that much easier to find another, and then another, creating a wall no one gets over. But if we look at ways we can be inclusive for all students, all future workers, all members of the community for that matter, we can work together, pool resources, pool ideas, and come to a place where, if we're not fully equal, we're as close as one can hope to get. For the truth of the matter is, prioritizing one agenda over another accomplishes nothing. However, by looking at intersectionality, the fact that you may be a person of a different background with a disability, you may have a different gender identity with a disability, recognizing these factors and the interplay between them, we can start to understand the whole person, not just see disability sticking out like some sore thumb. It's not all a person is. That's why I'm a big fan of person-first language, letting someone with a disability, or of any different background, tell you the way they prefer to be addressed. If you choose to make the conversations you have with them all about the disability, that is the only factor. It says you only see one piece of a much larger picture. And recognizing that students, in particular, have a right to succeed, no matter where they're coming from, no matter how they learn. That sends a very clear message to the community, not just that they're embracing accessibility today, but hopefully that these students will remember these principles as they go on into their lives, their relationships, their workplaces. Maybe they'll have that fundamental respect that says, someone cared enough to recognize my need for accessibility. I'm going to do it for the next guy, but I'm going to see if I can take it a step further. And that's the wonderful thing in disability life, watching the road being built before our eyes. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one.
Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.